Imagine global elites at Davos meditating with the happiest man in the world while wearing devices tracking their vital signs. This isn't science fiction. It's the reality of how happiness has transformed from a personal experience into an industry. For two centuries, we've been repeatedly sold the utopia that our deepest moral and political questions can be solved through measuring feelings. But who benefits when happiness becomes a metric? The answer reveals a troubling alliance between psychological expertise, economic interests, and social control mechanisms that shape our modern world. When governments measure national well-being and corporations employ chief happiness officers, we should ask whether these technologies serve human flourishing or something else entirely. Jeremy Bentham's eureka moment at 18 launched utilitarianism, the theory that right action produces maximum happiness. This intellectual became obsessed with measuring pleasure and pain, believing happiness was the only real political concern. His philosophical challenge was how to measure feelings, proposing pulse rate and money as metrics. Gustav Fechner developed psychophysics in 1850s Germany, suggesting mathematical laws govern the relationship between mind and matter. His experiments established correlations between physical changes and subjective sensations. William Stanley Jevons transformed economics by shifting value determination from producers to consumers, viewing economics as maximizing pleasure. This coincided with capitalism's evolution into an arena of psychological experiences, where physical objects became props for sensations. This reveals the central paradox of happiness science. If happiness is life's ultimate philosophical purpose, how could such a profound entity be scientifically measured? Conversely, if happiness is merely physical sensation, why should brain activity carry fundamental political importance? In 1879, Wilhelm Wundt established the first psychology laboratory. While Europeans pursued philosophical inquiry, Americans transformed psychology into management tools for industry. John B. Watson's 1913 behaviorism explicitly offered psychology to the educator, the physician, the jurist, and the businessman. This approach created a power imbalance between psychologist and subject. Watson preferred uninformed subjects and used deception to prevent behavior adjustments. After academic disgrace in 1920, Watson joined J. Walter Thompson Advertising Agency at four times his academic salary, advising colleagues they weren't selling products but producing psychological responses. Don't appeal to existing emotions, but trigger new ones. Meanwhile, economists increasingly separated from psychological theories, developing preference theory instead. By the 1930s, economics had divorced from psychology, focusing only on whether someone prefers one option over another. Homo economicus evolved from market theory to become a theory of justice itself. Economic valuation now settles moral controversies, as when Alaska used willingness-to-pay surveys to determine Exxon's $2.8 billion Valdez oil spill fine. Modern marketing still balances between behaviorist manipulation and consumer voice. Behaviorists bypass stated preferences to manipulate emotions directly, while those who listen often discover desires for authenticity no product can fulfill. Employee disengagement has become a serious economic concern. Only 13% of the global workforce is properly engaged, with active disengagement costing the U.S. economy up to $550 billion annually through absenteeism, presenteeism, and mental health problems. Frederick Winslow Taylor pioneered scientific management in the 1890s by breaking production into rationalized individual tasks. By the 1920s, Elton Mayo's Hawthorne studies transformed management from controlling physical labor to manipulating social relationships and feelings for productivity. Hans Selye developed the concept of stress as a biological response to excessive demands. Occupational health research in the 1960s revealed how power structures and job design directly impact health. Today's corporate wellness programs merge healthcare with performance management, offering gym memberships while implementing comprehensive monitoring through Health 2.0 technologies. Have you noticed how your workplace wellness program tracks your steps, sleep, and stress levels? What began as worker welfare concern has evolved into sophisticated surveillance systems that manage not just what you do, but how you feel while doing it. Depression rates correlate strongly with inequality, highest in societies like the US and UK. Studies show depression affects both losers and winners, with professional athletes twice as likely to experience it. Our competitive culture demands constant optimization while providing little genuine fulfillment. The Chicago School economists argued regulators acted from self-interest rather than public good. By 1970, Milton Friedman claimed a corporation's only moral duty was profit maximization. Their message to the unhappy was simple: start your own company, or accept there's something wrong with you, not society. Between 1957 and 1958, psychiatrists discovered drugs that restored optimism, making people feel more truly themselves. These early antidepressants showed sadness could be viewed in neurochemical terms. The DSM-3, 1980, marked a shift where mental illness became observable and classifiable without explaining causes. In a society valuing optimized personal growth, disorders of personal collapse become inevitable. Depression isn't simply unhappiness, but the inability to pursue happiness. A culture valuing only optimism produces pathologies of pessimism. A competitive economy turns defeatism into disease. Pay-it-forward pricing defies market logic, yet typically generates higher payments than conventional pricing. Corporations pursue freedom for themselves while restricting it for others, maintaining executive autonomy while securing customer commitment. Free offerings merely disguise market relationships, with even gratitude becoming monetized. Social networks have become health policy tools. Research showing loneliness poses greater health risks than smoking has led to social prescribing, where doctors recommend community groups. Positive psychology promotes gratitude and empathy as alternatives to market exchange, while justifying altruism through self-interest. Giving makes the giver happier. Gaming addiction reveals how social media users seek connection without sacrificing autonomy. Users compulsively seek validation while maintaining control over interactions, reducing relationships to pleasure delivery systems. Critiques of capitalism's individualism now come from marketing gurus and behavioral economists. Yet instead of systemic alternatives, they offer modified theories of individual psychology. This neoliberal socialism celebrates sharing and empathy, but only as habits of economically successful individuals. Working outdoors with nature offers recognized psychological benefits. Growing Well, a 10-acre vegetable farm in Cumbria, succeeds as a mental health intervention by functioning as a cooperative business where volunteers participate in decision-making rather than receiving treatment. How we explain human unhappiness is fundamentally an ethical and political question. Research links mental illness with economic inequality, unemployment, lack of workplace autonomy, and materialistic values. The critical issue is power distribution. When people feel controlled by external forces, they become more vulnerable to psychological breakdown. Psychology errs by modeling itself on physical sciences through mechanical minds or brain-based decisions. The most valuable methodology remains simple: ask people what they're feeling. This approach isn't taken seriously by managerial elites because it requires deliberation, credits people with legitimate interpretations of their circumstances, and demands listening skills. What if even a fraction of the billions spent monitoring our minds were redirected toward designing alternative political economic systems? Businesses organized around dialogue and cooperative control could offer an alternative to the psychological management techniques corporations have relied on for decades. In a world obsessed with measuring happiness, perhaps true well-being lies in creating communities where we have genuine agency, meaningful connections, and power to shape our collective future.